Just a quick note about today's episode. Today I'm going to be covering the write-up for Sir Ulnut Bloodworth in the style of the write-ups for the pre-gens in Alien Hunger. I say in the episode that you can go to Patreon to find a full write-up and character sheet for Sir Bloodworth, but as it turns out, on the day that I'm releasing this episode, and when I would otherwise have to do that and put that on Patreon, it is also a recording day. And it would be a disservice to you, the dumbheads, to use my precious recording time to put up this character sheet. So, if you're a daily listener, you'll have to wait just a little bit longer, and this weekend, when the Megasode comes out, then you can go to Patreon and find that write-up. That's it. On to the show. Welcome, dumbheads, to MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. In this series, we're examining every single goddamn page of Alien Hunger, a quick start adventure for Vampire the Masquerade, to determine what is the dumbest thing on that page. Every episode is one page, every episode is short. If you'd like to play along at home, this is 1991's Alien Hunger, the official PDF release from White Wolf. Today we are not discussing a page of Alien Hunger. We have some other business to take care of because of the podcast, because of the format. We've just finished talking about the player character write-ups, the pre-gens at the end of Alien Hunger. We've learned all about the sometimes interesting, sometimes dumb, sometimes infuriating, sometimes fantastically charmed lives of Vampire Drama Club, except for one member of Vampire Drama Club, Sir Ulnut Bloodworth, the original character that I created using the recommendations in this book to add to the pre-gens, to give him a little bit of flavor. You may have noticed, none of the other characters are knights, a major oversight. Not even really any fighter rogues. Nobody in this group can find traps. Nobody in this group knows how to use a sword. Frankly, I don't know how you're supposed to survive this adventure without a Sir Ulnut Bloodworth. But fortunately, we did not have to answer that question. We did have Sir Ulnut Bloodworth, and for the sake of completeness, I have written up a complete profile for Sir Bloodworth in the style of these other profiles we've been looking at. Now, I haven't read those verbatim because they're in the book on the page, and so I've just commented upon them. For Sir Bloodworth, I'm just going to read what I wrote, and I'm going to put an abridged version of it that fits in the format used for the rest of Vampire Drama Club on Patreon in a free post available to everyone. So you can go see a proper write-up and character sheet for Sir Bloodworth. If you have a physical copy of Alien Hunger, you can print this out, paste it into your book. You can frame it, hang it in your study or your living room, put it on your desk at work, or just fold it up and, you know, carry it in your purse or wallet. And then if you ever need some inspiration, if you're ever feeling a lack of aristocratic British courage, then you can pull it out and unfold it and think, what would Sir Bloodworth do? Behead someone. This could be the beginning of some very positive bad decisions for you. So, okay, enough preamble. This is what I've written. This is longer than the profiles the characters get in the book. As I said, I'm going to put a shortened version of this that fits on the page that is the same length as what the other pre-gens get on Patreon. But here on the episode, you get the whole story. Just to set expectations, this is not going to be full of jokes. I've been fucking around with Sir Bloodworth, the fighter slash rogue in a Vampire the Masquerade campaign for the whole run of this book. What follows is just like his straight ahead profile, which I think he deserves. Like he's no more ridiculous than these other characters, and they got serious profiles. So Sir Bloodworth deserves one. So I'm going to do the whole profile, including the sections that all these profiles get, your role, which is sort of like role-playing hints and an idea of how the character fits into the rest of Vampire Drama Club. Then image, which is about the physical description. Notes, which just sort of specifies for any dots on the character sheet that need further definition, like if you have linguistics dots, which languages do you know? I'm going to do all that, and then I'll be back at the end for some quick commentary on why the backstory is the way it is, and that's going to be it for what I think is going to be a pretty short day. Ulnut was born into the immense wealth and privilege of the venerable Bloodworth family in 1941 Britain, at a moment of equally immense national privation. Little Nutty, as his parents dubbed him, was raised to see his family's wealth and prestige as among the pillars of British society, and therefore of civilization. It was not only the family's right, but its duty to preserve its own opulence as a national treasure. Perhaps this was only the rationalizing myth of a family insulated from the horrors of war, but for Ulnut, it inspired authentic noblesse oblige, as well as a lifelong passion to live up to the best sense of the word, aristocrat. Through a vigorous boyhood at Eton College, Ulnut discovered the kind of man he would become. Athletic, adventurous, a lover of theater, but off-puttingly blunt and not very bright. Shakespeare spoke to Ulnut's love of both British culture and the limelight. Though only a middling actor, he left Eton enthusiastic to put his considerable wealth and his meager dramatic talent to use in fostering British theater. He still spent much of his time on his hobbies of writing and fencing, but theater was a calling. Aulnay became an enfant terrible of the British upper crust. He was young, he was obnoxiously handsome, and he was a prodigal patron of the arts who openly disapproved of anyone who failed to match his generosity. Aulnay's bad reputation was an unlikely boon for Queen and country, making him just barely plausible as a front for an MI6 operation in the Cold War hotspot of Helsinki. In 1960, calling upon Aulnay's patriotism, the spy agency requested that he infiltrate Helsinki's emerging, youth-dominated, left-leaning theater scene. Using his own money, Aulnay not only developed crucial contacts and institutional influence in the Finnish art scene, but purchased and rented property, ostensibly for theatrical productions, that MI6 and the CIA used to spy on Soviet intelligence communications. Aulnay proved himself brave and resourceful as well as rich, and was even assigned a few informal personal assignments to snoop around secure areas as part of Operation Platinum, a still-classified, successful effort to tap Soviet embassy communications via secret tunnels beneath Helsinki. These tastes of danger and personal heroism proved addictive. When Aulnay returned to England in 1965, having set up Finnish MI6 assets to take over his role in the arts community, he took up hunting, refined his sport fencing skills by studying historical swordsmanship techniques, improved his fitness, and went through a globe-trotting, thrill-seeking phase. Aulnay began to see himself as a true adventurer and took risks to match. Ironically, his recklessness caught up to him not when he was lion hunting or rock climbing, but during one of his sporadic forays into stage acting. As an investor and actor in a production of Coriolanus, a frustrated Aulnay imposed upon a young actor to put more and more quote-unquote passion into his stage fighting until the latter accidentally took out one of Aulnay's eyes with a prop dagger. Aulnay, who had vaguely assumed that a prop dagger couldn't harm an eyeball, took responsibility for the mishap and used his first appearance in public with his new eye patch to publicize the production. In 1969, Aulnay funded an intensely pro-establishment production of Julius Caesar at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, a rebuke to counterculture that became his best-known contribution to the arts, and was one of the achievements cited when Aulnay was knighted in 1981. Ostensibly, Aulnay was awarded his KBE for his contributions to British theater, although behind the scenes, his contributions of time, money, and personal service to Operation Platinum weighed heavily on the scales. Sir Aulnay Bloodworth, as he now proudly introduced himself, gained enough fame and status from knighthood to launch his own international touring company, which served as both a legitimate global ambassador of British theater and a vehicle for Sir Bloodworth to tread the boards around the world in various vanity productions. His newfound notoriety as a champion of British tradition was not all to his benefit. Soon after Sir Bloodworth was knighted, a counterculture activist group broke into his mansion and vandalized his personal art collection. Incensed, yet oddly excited, Sir Bloodworth employed both a security expert and a notorious art thief to revamp his security and educate him about the latest in criminal, security, and investigative techniques. Sir Bloodworth developed something of a reputation as a security buff among Britain's elite, and even volunteered on a couple of occasions to attempt mock thefts at the mansions of his wealthy friends to test their security. It was while starring in his company's 1986 production of Titus Andronicus that Sir Bloodworth first visited Denver, Colorado. As an avid outdoorsman and skier, Sir Bloodworth was prone to fall in love with Denver, and it didn't hurt that the local theater community recognized and embraced him despite his relatively low profile outside of the UK. After the production closed, Sir Bloodworth purchased a mansion in Denver and began spending much of his time there, particularly in the winters. He became a maven of the local arts community, and especially of Denver Community Theater, which offered him a small enough pond to act, direct, and produce in whatever proportion he wanted, all in a major city, and all near endless opportunities for writing, skiing, hiking, climbing, and whatever other activities he cared to try. Naturally, Sir Bloodworth became a minor local celebrity, at least among theatergoers, making him an obvious target for Jacob Prester. Sir Bloodworth was in fact the director of the Romeo and Juliet production in which Prester first saw Emerson, and may have been chosen for the embrace before Emerson, though Emerson did become the center of Prester's plan. Your role. Sir Bloodworth is the voice of age and experience in the group, but he's also quixotic and far removed from the real world outside his bubble of aristocratic privilege. He thinks of himself as a hero and sometimes acts the part. However, he's really driven by his archaic sense of propriety and by his desire to cut the figure of a dashing, sophisticated adventurer, a modern knight. Unlike his chivalry, his cunning and his talent for violence are very real. He may be a braggart, but he has invested a lifetime in learning to back up his boasts that he is a man of action, and not a soft, privileged dilettante. He'll see himself as the group's leader whether he is or not, though he's not interested in fussing with details or policing the others. He'll take to his new form immediately and without hesitation. At his age, just over the hill after a lifetime of being handsome and hale, a slight change in diet seems a small price to pay for health, power, and immortality. Image: an eye-patched, gray-templed 50-year-old man in excellent shape, whose distinguished, slightly old-fashioned style is offset by a roguish twinkle in his eye and the bohemian flair of an eccentric old thespian. Sir Bloodworth favors expensive suits and ostentatious rings. Whenever feasible, he also carries an authentic medieval broadsword, refurbished to be as handsome and combat-effective as if it were forged yesterday. Notes: Sir Bloodworth is fluent in Middle English and Finnish. His fame is for his contributions to theater, which make him recognizable to theater fans and to his fellow elites in British society. Much of his vast wealth is tied up in the mansions he maintains in both the UK and in Denver, as well as his private jet. However, as a globe-traveling expat, he's in a better position than the rest of the group to maintain his wealth, even if he has to go underground or leave Denver. So that's Sir Bloodworth. I really have grown to like Sir Bloodworth a lot. It was a bit difficult, as I'm sure you can tell from Sir Bloodworth's very storied life. Lots of twists and turns. It was difficult to account for all of the skills that I want this fighter slash rogue to have, given that this is a goth punk world, but it doesn't exactly have adventurers. Like, it's not that dramatized. So I can't really have a British aristocrat who, like, goes out and robs tombs, fights monsters, whatever. Like, you know, I could do that if I wanted to do, like, some World of Darkness bullshit, if I wanted him to be in the Society of Leopold or whatever. But I wanted to stick with this time in the World of Darkness, where we really had just established Vampire the Masquerade and nothing else. And I wanted him basically to be a baseline human up until his embrace. So given that, it was a bit difficult to explain, like, why does he know things about security systems? Like, why can he find traps? Why does he have this investigation skill? Why is he good at stealth? But I'm glad I had to meet that challenge, because that's what led me to look into Cold War Helsinki, which turned out to be perfect, because there's this theater scene coming together, which is perfect for him. Of course, he's going to do this. He's going to have the money and, like, the image to be able to travel there and do this for his government. It makes a lot of sense for him to operate in the tradition of MI6 fronts, attempts to influence the culture of Finland toward one side or the other of the Cold War. Operation Platinum, by the way, is based on the Operation Gold and Silver that MI6 and the CIA enacted to spy on Soviet communications at other locations in Berlin and I think in Austria. So my thought is this is a similar thing where there was, like, a literal tunnel dug, like, probably Sir Bloodworth leased a warehouse for, like, theater practice, and then behind the scenes, MI6 was able to, like, tunnel down into the ground and get to some cables that the Soviet embassy was using and tap them and then kind of, like, cover their tracks before rehearsals and everything for the play were over. And as this kind of privileged, wealthy person who's known to be eccentric, a young man who's into the arts for real, so it's a great cover. Occasionally, at a certain point, once MI6 knew they could trust Allnut, they would, you know, have him go sneak around in a place you're not really supposed to be and check something out for them. You know, if he's at the home of a friend who might have some communist leanings, wander around the house, you know, see what he can find. Maybe he's got some friends whose parents are in politics. Maybe go to some family stuff and try to overhear some conversations. So that kind of explains the stealth skill a little bit. To give you a little preview, I am slightly concerned that I'm not going to have enough dots to make Sir Bloodworth when we get to the switch to Vampire the Masquerade 2nd edition, which we're doing, by the way. More on that in the wrap-up episode. The character sheet's going to change, like, the skills are going to change around, and I've given him all this stuff in his backstory now where I feel like once the skills change, it may be kind of a stretch to make him, but I'll get to that when I get to it. That's it for today. This is a quick one. This is just kind of putting this character on the record because we're going to be sticking with Sir Bloodworth for quite a while. Once again, more on that in the wrap-up episode. But before that, join me next time for, I think, the final interior page of Alien Hunger, if I'm not mistaken. I'm recording these a little bit out of order, on MDC, the Megadumbcast. This has been Megadumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big megasode on the patrons-only RSS feed. If you'd like to get access to that feed and support the show, go to patreon.com/megadumbcast. Social media was never healthy and is now dying, so if you want to contact me, you can email me. I am megadumbcast@gmail.com. This season's theme song is Suck City by Black Math, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/black_math. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.